Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, releasing episode 104 of Wheat All About It, a fascinating conversation with plant geneticist and club wheat breeder Kim Garland Campbell and Karen Sanguinet, a plant physiologist at Washington State University. Campbell is well known within agricultural circles. She is an employee of the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Sanguinet's profile is rising as a researcher whose crop physiology lab at WSU focuses on water foraging abilities of plants. I spoke with both of them on November 27, 2018, about the winter conditions wheat plants face, how they respond to the cold, and what makes them so incredibly resilient. I'm always surprised by what I think I know but really don't. Here's a good for instance. From the beginning of my days as an agricultural reporter, I have had wheat plants described to me as either being dormant during the winter or in a state of hibernation. Actually, neither is the case, and the wheat plant never shuts down growing from the moment the seed imbibes water. As you'll hear ahead in the episode I've entitled, Dead of Winter, Alive with Life, Wheat Plants in the Cold. Our favorite crop may slow down, but it never stops in its progress toward harvest. I interviewed Campbell and Sanguinet at the Western Wheat Quality Lab conference room on the WSU campus. I thought finding out more about what's going on with the wheat plant during the winter would be educational for all involved. I had plenty of preconceived notions for sure, and Campbell and Sanguinet gently set me straight a couple of times during our conversation. Campbell speaks first, and about the 2 minute and 50 second mark, Sanguinet comes in. Their voices are distinct, and it's easy to keep track of who's speaking. I started by explaining my rationale for the interview, and here, I'll let you listen in.
The reason that I'm talking to you two here now is because I'm just sort of curious about what is happening to the wheat plant during this period of time that we really don't think of it a whole lot. Now, I've heard folks talk about wheat plants hibernating in the winter. Is this the same sort of hibernation that occurs for a bear? And how are they alike and how are they different?
I don't think it's exactly the same because a bear goes into a kind of a physiological stasis place, you know, where it actually loses weight and resources during the winter. The wheat plant is just, it can continue to grow very, very slowly. So it's really kind of weathering the cold weather. And then when the weather gets a little better, it'll grow. Or in an area like Oregon, when you get down into Oregon, where it doesn't get quite as cold, that wheat will continue to grow all winter. You know, like if you measured the amount of biomass that was there in December, there would be more biomass there in February, even though it might not look like it's grown a whole lot. So
hibernating is not the correct word. Is dormancy the correct word?
Well, we use that term a lot. I don't actually think that's quite right. I think it's just kind of weathering the winter. I don't have, do you have a good term for what it's doing in the winter?
Well, in a physiological sense, what it's doing is just growing very, very slowly.
Right.
And it's responding to its environment, which is getting cues from temperature and day length. And in the case of what we look at, which is the root system will not grow tremendously or very appreciably between December and, say, February. But as soon as it gets the appropriate cues, a little bit of warming of the soil, longer day length, growth takes off. And we see very, very rapid growth in the root system before we see appreciable biomass accumulation in the shoot. Again, it's why we calculate growing degree days for wheat plants and heat units to see how they're growing. When a plant is experiencing any kind of abiotic stress, whether it be cold, you know, salt, low pH, drought, heat, the first thing that stops is growth.
So you're saying that with the right scientific instruments that you could go out in the dead of winter on Christmas Day, for instance, and you could look at that plant and you could see it grow?
Well, what I'm saying is it's not really growing very quickly, but it's still incredibly metabolically active, and there's a lot going on in terms of signaling and molecular cues and things that are changing over that period of cold. It's becoming more cold hardy. There are changes in gene expression. There are changes, epigenetic changes or changes to the DNA that happen that aren't changes in the DNA itself, but modifications of the chromatin structure of that DNA. It's very technical. I'm sorry.
So neither dormancy or hibernation are accurate terms to describe what's going on with the wheat plant during the winter. Is that correct?
I think that's correct. When I think of dormancy, I think of, well, what the seed goes dormant when after we harvest. It's not really very active metabolically, like genes aren't being expressed, proteins aren't being made. It's kind of just sitting there. And then as soon as you imbibe it with water and put it in the ground, it becomes active again. Mm-hmm. A lot of plants, perennials, you know, they'll completely die. The top structure will completely die off in the winter. I think of those as dormant, although I think probably there's still some physiological activity going on. But the wheat plant in the winter doesn't get to that state. It's incredibly active. In fact, we were really surprised when we did some experiments. Stan Skinner did these where he froze the plants to just below freezing, and then moved them back into just above freezing, and all this gene expression took off, and then put them back below freezing, and then put them back above, and each time he did it, he got more gene expression happening. And he was surprised, too. He said, boy, they're incredibly active at below freezing temperatures. And it can get too cold, you know, and usually if we get down below 10 degrees Fahrenheit and there's no snow cover, we'll lose plants because they just can't handle that much cold weather, and they'll die then. But I think until that point, until they die, they're pretty physiologically active.
Fascinating. I you know, so much for hibernation.
Yeah.
Is there a point at which the plant is most hardy during the winter, and is there a phase at which the plant is most susceptible to the cold?
The wheat right now is actually pretty susceptible to cold, the winter wheat. Now, you know, this podcast is being recorded in
November 27th.
So a lot of the wheat has just come up. It hasn't received enough cold weather yet to be what we call acclimated, which another term for that is hardening off, where the exposure to cold kind of gets the wheat activity going, okay, this is what we're going to do now. We're going to survive cold. And that's a lot like us. Mm-hmm. Like we've all just pulled out our winter coats and our hats. And right now, you know, I need to be as bundled up as I can possibly be. But in February, I'll probably be going around with, you know, with a lot less clothes on because I'm not hardened off yet. But that takes about 6 weeks to get it well acclimated. And so usually our wheat is the most cold tolerant in December and January. And then once it receives its cues, enough of its cues, like full vernalization, which is 8 to 12 weeks, then it starts gradually to lose that real cold tolerance. And over time, it kind of becomes less and less cold tolerant, and the plant is kind of ready to start growing again, but the temperatures aren't allowing it to do that yet. And so the period when it's pretty susceptible again of the winter is often late February, where it's ready to grow, but it's still kind of cold out and we can still get some pretty cold temperatures.
You use the phrase hardening off, and certainly I have heard that over the years many times. Silly question, do plants actually get harder? And what does hardening off mean?
They kind of do. Have you, like, and now I'm going to my geraniums on my front porch, but geraniums are incredibly cold tolerant, but they don't survive freezing temp. They're not like wheat. They start growing slower, I think. So if you compare a geranium leaf in August with one in November that hasn't really been deeply frozen yet, it's tougher. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because the cells are growing slower, and they're just, and the wheat plant's the same way. You know, when they first come up, they're kind of tender. But if you were to go out now, like to the Lind area and and feel some of those leaves, they'd be a lot tougher.
And what causes that toughness?
Well, as Kim said, what happens when you have colder temperatures and the observation of the cells being more dense, typically cell size is smaller and the cells aren't as flexible. Cold also triggers accumulation of cell wall modification enzymes. We get thickening of cuticular waxes. We get increased lignification of tissues. We also see changes in membranes, in the plasma membrane and other cellular membranes within the plant. And I liken it, or I compare it to the difference between olive oil and butter. What happens is that we get more unsaturated fatty acids in the plasma membrane of cold-treated plants. And an unsaturated fatty acid has more double bonds in its side chain, so it makes it more bulky. So it acts like olive oil. So you're kind of greasing that membrane so that it's more flexible and not as brittle as like butter if you cut it, a saturated fatty acid. So changes in the membranes, changes in the cuticle, changes in the cell wall. So it's a multi-level difference within the plant from a physiological perspective. And again, because the plants aren't growing as quickly, they're not elongating as much. That means the cells are smaller and more dense. And that also gives that extra rigidity and kind of, they're kind of dwarfed. And, you know, just like we kind of cuddle up, and, you know, the plant's kind of doing the same thing and saying, brr, you know. But that's the best, way I could explain it.
Okay. All right. What happens from the moment the seed is placed in the soil through germination and the coleoptile coming through the surface of the soil?
The seed itself, the first thing that happens is that it imbibes water. It takes up water. And the seed coat splits. And the first thing to emerge is the radical, the embryonic root. And that is essentially negatively phototropic, so it grows away from the light. And it's positively geotropic or gravitropic, so it grows into the soil. From there, the coleoptile emerges and pushes up through the surface of the soil. It's negatively gravitropic and positively phototropic. And what has to happen in the first few days of germination is that that little seedling has to have enough seed reserves to establish itself as an independent being. So it has to set up things like water and nutrient transport, vascular development, actively start photosynthesizing, and become its own autonomous being.
You're talking about the seminal root and the coleoptile stretching in different directions. At what point does the crown actually establish?
It depends on the variety. It depends on, timing. It depends on the growing degree days and how quickly the plant and seedling itself is growing. Typically, most of the root system, one way to measure crown activity is to look at when the crown roots are initiated. And that can happen depending, again, on temperature, how quickly the seedling germinates, how quickly. It's a matter of resources and resource allocation to that area, to that growing area. So it can be a couple of weeks to a couple of months, I'd say.
But in general, you know, our winter wheat, not this year so much because much of it went in late, but most of our winter wheat forms its crown before we go into the winter, especially the material that was planted out, say, at Lind, that has its crown already, and it's starting to put down its crown roots. And the material planted over here is just coming up, so it's going to be January before anything happens. And spring wheat's completely different. It will generally form its crown fairly rapidly because it's got to get up and go.
The crown has been described to me as the wheat plant's brain. Kill it, kill the plant. First, do you think that brain is an accurate description for the crown? And second, how does the crown form?
When you talk about brain and you, I mean, as humans, we are very anthropomorphic and we try to relate other living organisms such as plants to ourselves. Darwin actually called the root the brain of the plant because of its developmental plasticity. So I think it depends on how you define a brain or a brain-like. It's certainly integrating a lot of signals. It's certainly responding to environmental and developmental cues. It's certainly a site of activity and is responsible, particularly in winter wheat, for overwintering, and essentially is a huge carbon sink for the plant. That's where the plant is putting all its resources to overwinter so that it can grow and recover.
Yeah. It's where all the meristems are in the wheat plant, and the meristems are, you know, the growing points. It's kind of like an area of stem cells. So all of the leaves and all of the culms and even all of the little tiny seed heads come out of those meristems. That's why it's so protective. And that's why it's such a carbon sink, because it's the young plant's feeding everything it can into that area.
Do the sugars in the plant serve as antifreeze? Mm-hmm.
The sugars and solutes in the plants that are produced in response to cold essentially decreases the freezing temperature, or the temperature at which ice is able to form in the plant. Of course, Kim also alluded to snow cover, and snow is a very wonderful, excellent insulator. That's why you see citrus farmers in Florida spray water that freezes around their crops to protect fruit. High-value commodities often use the insulation ability of ice and snow to protect plants or fruits. And so that's what happens with winter wheat. And as she said, you know, that the insulating capacity of the snow cover, the changing amount of snow cover or the variation in snow cover can have huge ramifications on winter survival and cold hardiness or cold tolerance for the wheat plant itself. That being said, again, you know, you can think of it this way. The more sugars and osmoprotectants, they're called, that are produced by the plant, the lower the freezing temperature. And so for example, if ice typically forms at 0 degrees, right? So as you increase the sugar content, you're decreasing that temperature to -5, -. In the case of really cold tolerant wheat lines, they can survive to -19 mm-hmm. centigrade. Sorry, I'm science speak, not farmer speak.
And how cold is 19 degrees centigrade Fahrenheit?
-19 is about 10, actually.
10 degrees.
Yeah,
Fahrenheit.
10 degrees,
yeah,
Fahrenheit.
Yeah. But one thing that we need to clarify is that there's a difference between the air temperature and the soil temperature. So the wheat crown is in the soil, which we were talking about earlier. And so what I like to look at when I'm looking at temperature is the depth that 2 inches in the soil is. And if you go like to some of the old Ag WeatherNet records and you see some of our big freezes that we know are damaging, you can see where that soil temperature has decreased because the air temperature was cold and because there was no snow cover. Most of the time it hangs out, the soil temperature is kind of in the high 20s. That 2-inch depth, but you'll see it go down to around 20 or something like that, or you'll see these dips, and then you think back onto, you know, what happened that year, and there would have been reports of winter kill when you see that. Those temperatures go down.
But isn't it the wind rather than the cold that is the real killer?
The response of wheat to drought is very similar of the response to cold. It's a dehydration effect in both cases. And so the worst thing for wheat is to have wind that's causing dehydration and dry soil and cold temperatures all at the same time. When you get that, you get dead wheat. And especially if that happens in February, because then we usually don't have snow cover, mm-hmm. and the wheat is less cold tolerant. It's still coming out of that, often right around the time of the wheat research review.
If we get a warm spell in January and the temperature goes up to 50 degrees, what happens to the plant?
It becomes more metabolically active. You know, it starts thinking, okay, I can, you know, we can start putting on some leaves and stuff. It's not going to, most of the winter wheat that we have will not be ready to start elongating and jointing yet, because photoperiod is also used to control that. So January is still, the days are too short. So it will put on some leaves. It depends on how long that warming period is. You know, if it's a couple weeks or something, you'd really see some differences. But if it's only a day or two, the plant will kind of gear up and then gear back down again.
You mentioned photoperiod. That refers to day length. Is the plant still reacting to the photoperiod in the winter?
Yeah, I'm going to start this one and then hand it off to Karen because she's the physiologist. But so wheat is long day photoperiod, so it responds to lengthening days. Our winter is very short days. And so it's not going to flower until it gets enough of these long days. The wheat that's been bred throughout the world actually has varying degrees of response to long days. So if you take a wheat plant that was bred for Kansas, it's still long day photoperiod sensitive, but it doesn't need as long of days because in Kansas you're at a different latitude. Our wheat up here needs really long days. And so when we're trying to grow wheat in the greenhouse, we typically give it 16-hour days to switch over to growing. And then some of our wheat, actually a wheat like Eltan, is really needs long days, whereas a wheat like Stevens wheat, which was bred for Oregon, the days don't have to be as long. And so if you plant Eltan in Oregon, the weather can be great, temperature can be great, everything's great, all the wheat around it is growing, and Eltan's just sitting there going, nope, I'm not ready, I need a longer day.
I think Kim summarized it well. The plants are measuring day length, and they do that through photoreceptors, so they detect the fluence and the duration of a light cue. So they measure red and blue light, and they use the integration of that, the duration and the intensity of the red and blue light, as a trigger to transition to flowering. So as we talked about the crown, what happens is the crown will transition from vegetative to reproductive in response to those cues. And also it can activate axillary meristems or tillers that allow the plants to get more bushy. And so the threshold at which the plant responds is the photoperiod. So in long day plants, it's measuring day length, and the day length has to exceed. It can vary. Of course, we're on a 24-hour clock, so that's called a circadian clock. Just like animals, plants have a circadian clock, and they measure 24-hour periods, and you can see that cycling if you take them out of, you know, day-night cycle and put them in constant light or constant dark, you still see cycling of genes. About 30% of genes and proteins cycle on a diurnal basis.
For those unfamiliar with the word diurnal, it's another way of saying every 24 hours. When I get an idea about a podcast, I mostly have no idea how the thing is going to turn out. The best podcast is when I learn something new, and I learned a lot in the first part of my conversation with Kim Campbell and Karen Sanguinet, entitled Dead of Winter, Alive with Life, Wheat Plants in the Cold. I hope you did too. As I look at podcast numbers, I frequently see the second half of a two-parter drops off in listeners. That disturbs me on a number of levels, but mostly because the second half is frequently the best half of the pair. It's like the second half of anything. People find a rhythm. They become more comfortable. They, in essence, hit their stride. So always be sure to listen to the B-side. Now I suppose everyone will have expectations about next week's part two. So be it. Join me here again next week after you've opened the Christmas presents for episode 105, part 2, Dead of Winter, Alive with Life, Wheat Plants in the Cold, on the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored podcast, Wheat All About It!
Don't like chemicals, don't like killing. Look in your kitchen, the story there's chillin'. Plant food, Windex, mouse bait too. Mr. Clean, easy off, even pet shampoo. You wanna be a hypocrite? Just forget to have the shit. We feed you.